From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding the balance in body, mind, and spirit. And with that balance comes more clearly thinking and being able to make decisions from a place that you can have more confidence in, and it helps improve your life. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, this is our first show after the new year, so I want to wish everyone a happy new year, and may it be healthy and prosperous and lots of fun for all of you. And I also want to send out a happy birthday to my friend Jim and Sari's little girl, Isla, and a happy birthday to my good friend, Jay, and prayers for great birthdays and great years to come for both of them. So, today we're going to be talking about girls. So here's this guy who's going to be talking to you about girls. My guest today is someone who is a guest on the show about, I can tell you exactly, December 18th, 2004, so about a year ago. And her name is Patty Hansen. Now, Patty is married to Mark Victor Hansen and has been the editor and author of a number of books that started out with the first one that Mark Victor Hansen did called Chicken Soup for the Soul, which has been very popular. And over the years, what's happened is that they've gotten kind of focused and more specific. So there's been Chicken Soup for, well, what we did a year ago was Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul, and today we're doing Chicken Soup for the Girl Soul, and there are probably half a dozen or more other Chicken Soup books that some of you may have read or may need to read. And the show today is live, and it's a call-in show, so if you have any questions or comments for Patty or myself or about the book or the things you've gone through as a girl, or as a man, the things you're aware that the girls around you have gone through, feel free to call in. And that number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310 in the Phoenix area. And even if you're listening via the Internet outside the Phoenix area, it's 480-949-1310. So before I get Patty on the microphone, I want to read a couple of things from the book. And the first one is from the introduction. A preteen reader, Paige Rasmussen, puts it this way. Right now is the time in our lives when we are dealing with peer pressure, boys, and puberty. And it is really nice to know that in a rough time like this in our lives, there is actually someone else in the world who is going through the same thing. Most of us have our mothers and sisters, but sometimes that's just not enough. Which is a good reason why this book was written. Now, on page 37, the beginning of the chapter, I've Got the Power, Kelsey Lynn Carone, who's 12 years old, writes a poem. And she says, "Life is short. Don't ever waste it. Life is sweet. Take time to taste it. Life is a journey. Find the right path. Life is entertaining. Don't be afraid to laugh. Life is for good times. Make them last. Life has its bad times. Put them in the past. Life is a chance. Make sure you take it. But most importantly, life is what you make it." The reason I like that poem is because it really sums up everything the show is about. And so I wanted to thank Kelty for writing that, because it seems to bring everything down to a really clear perspective about the choices we make about living in this world and in our bodies and in our lives. So with all that being said, I want to welcome Patty Hansen to our show. And I'm glad you're back with us, Patty.
Well, Stuart, thank you so much for inviting me to be on the air with you again, because it's always a pleasure, and I just love you.
Oh, thank you.
That's just simple.
I really, you know, it's like I always enjoy the show and the guests that I have, but there are some guests that I really feel a connection with, and there was a really nice flow and like-mindedness. In the show the last time you were on. So I'm just glad to be talking to you again.
Well, thanks.
So my first question to you is, what's the difference between chicken soup for the preteen soul and chicken soup for the girl soul?
Well, only specifically that the stories here are dealing with issues that girls, only girls, face. I'm sure you're aware that most of our readers for the Chicken Soup series across the board are women or girls, and particularly in our series, which deals with preteen years, my writing partner Irene and I have written Chicken Soup for the Kid Soul, Preteen 1, Preteen 2, Girls, and we're currently working on Kid Soul 2.
Which one?
Kid Soul 2. It's hard to say, a little bit. Chicken Soup for the
Kid
Soul, too, which is actually going to skew to a younger audience, a little bit younger. But
our main
focus has been and will continue to be more or less the preteen years. And we've got about, I'd say, probably 87% of our readers are girls.
Mm-hmm.
11-year-old girls, for some reason. We get literally thousands of letters from 11-year-old girls. They just are like the poem you read. Actually, funny thing, I picked out the same exact one that I was going to read.
You like-minded this, right?
Yeah. Can you believe that somebody that's 12 years old can come up with something so clear about what life is about? And we adults sit here still in a quandary a lot of times trying to figure it out. If we listen to preteens once in a while, I think we'd learn an awful lot.
Well, there's that phrase, out of the mouths of babes.
Exactly.
Which adults have been
using
for eons, because it's always amazing what the wisdom and profoundness that comes out of children's mouths sometimes. Because they have a more innocent, direct look at what they're dealing with, as opposed to so many of us adults that have so much baggage, and everything we're seeing and experiencing, we're filtering through that baggage, and the kids have a lot less of it. So there's more of a truth coming out of them, I think.
Absolutely. And also in the preteen years that they go through, developmentally, they tend to see things more in black and white. That those shadings of gray is really a learning process that starts someplace around 14 or 15 years old, where they start building in well, maybe, maybe not types of situations, whereas a preteen will say drugs are bad across the board. You know, they'll say, you know, you shouldn't do blah, blah, blah. And they're very, very clear about what is a right thing and a wrong thing to do. And if we as parents and adults in their lives can encourage them to hold on to these idealistic types of feelings about situations and experiences through their teen years, they'll really have a good handle on being a very healthy adult.
Well, it's also the fact that as a preteen boy or girl, it's at that age, like you said, where there's more of a black and white. They know right from wrong if they've been taught it. And even if they've not been taught it, some of them have that innate sense of right and wrong. But they're about to embark on that period in life where so much more peer pressure comes in to smoke and do drugs and drink and to lie and to do all sorts of things, that it's great to get a foundation for these girls before they really get into that level and with those temptations.
Exactly. And that's really what our books focus on, is helping kids across the board make healthy choices, knowing that now at 8 or 9, when they enter those preteen years, that they already know how really to do almost everything. They could cook a meal if they had to, and they can get dressed, and they can get to school on time, and most kids do that by themselves if they're given a chance to do that, that our job as parents is to continue to guide them and support them and create boundaries that they will feel safe in, but yet they will be able to become more expansive in their feeling nature. And we need to really support that, that idealistic view of life, because kids, like you said, if we don't support that as parents, they will bow to peer pressure. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying support, and it's really hard. I'm not putting that into and kind of lightly. I've been through it myself. I know being a parent is a consistent job of learning how to walk a fine line all the time, 24/7. It's very difficult to be a parent or an adult in a preteen's life and know when you're crossing the line into privacy or being a responsible adult and knowing what your child is actually doing.
And for those parents that are trying to be their kids' friends and not setting boundaries enough, and the kids then, you know, don't have a sense of an adult and a parent and consequences. Because some parents are just afraid that if they're not looking cool to the mm-hmm. kids, they're going to lose them.
Well, they just need to know they don't look cool to their kids anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You cannot give me one 12-year-old girl who's going to tell me that her dad and her mom are really cool. I mean, they may think that inside, you know, but what makes a parent really cool to a 12-year-old girl is not what maybe a parent thinks is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Being cool to a 12-year-old means, you know, my parents try to understand me. They support me. They're there for me. They create a family situation. They give me time. That's one of the letters that we get all the time from people, is that we just don't know how important the time is that we're willing to give our children.
Well, let's talk. I want to start with some basics about this series. And, you know, because looking at this book, and I've read a lot of it, I didn't read every single story, but I read quite a bit of it, as I did with the Preteen Soul.
Yay for
and,
you, Stuart.
Excuse me?
You rock.
Well, I enjoyed them. I even cried through a few of them, you know, because, you know, boy or girl, you relate to the issues that are coming up, because they're human issues that are put in the context of what a girl's going through. But, in fact, I was going to read one of them, Compassion for a Bully. I was one of those kids that got picked on all the time.
Yeah.
I understood what bullies were like, and I actually even remember in elementary school hating them and feeling sorry for them at the same time.
Uh-huh.
You know, having a sense of compassion, because I was an intuitive kid. I was an old soul. I am an old soul, and even while they were picking on me, I knew they were in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And all they were doing was inflicting their pain on me, and it was horrendous.
Yes, absolutely.
But the story, you know, Compassion for a Bully, really spoke to me, and there were a few others that I really had tears in my eyes reading, and I'm not a girl.
No, so. and we do all go through that. But, you know, let's go back to the developmental thing about girls at this age group. The backstabbing from friends is a huge, huge issue, probably more than boys experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, you know, it's becoming a bigger thing for some reason. There's been several books written, I'm sure that you're aware of, a lot of them that have been out, for parents to read about the issues that their daughters are going through during these preteen years, and as far as it relates to friendships and the kinds of betrayals that they go through. In fact, there was a movie that came out, about a year ago called Mean Girls. All dealing with the same thing, that it's not only a particular bully, but sometimes can be a group situation, or it can be absolutely horrifying to a kid to be dealing with the body issues that they're going through, and then not to feel safe at school and not have any place to turn to try to understand. Like you said, you understood that the bully was obviously in pain and acting that pain out by taking it out on other people.
It didn't make it any easier to be on the
receiving end. It doesn't. There you go. It doesn't make it easier to bear.
But I was aware of what was going on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because you talked about the backstabbing and stuff, and what comes to mind are two of the stories. One about this girl who was new in a school, and this, I forgot about slam books. I remembered them going around in junior high school and how horrible they were. And this one girl just said no to it, you know. And all of a sudden, the other girls were so relieved that somebody was finally saying no that they started ripping their pages out, and the thing got squashed.
Right.
You know, and it just took the courage of one person to say, I don't want to play this game, and I don't care that everyone else is doing it.
And that's the one of the wonderful things about a book like this, is that the stories in here can encourage one particular person to make a healthy choice. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to do that. And that creates the ripple effect that what you in your life are looking to do, and my life I'm looking to do, is every action that we make that's a positive change out there someplace in the world, that's what we encourage the kids to do through these books.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get all these stories? I know that I wanted to get back to the basics, but because when a book like this comes in, you see hundreds of stories written by kids in a single book, you must have gotten thousands of submissions.
Thousands, literally thousands.
Is it that these girls knew you were putting this book together, or you just took it from letters that they came in from reading other ones?
Actually, it's both. As the years go by and we continue to produce more books for preteens, we would get letters from girls and we'd say, wow, this would be a really good one to hold aside for Girl Soul. In fact, some of the stories in here we actually had for about 4 years. We went back to these kids that are already in college, you know, which was kind of funny. And they're like, oh, I don't even remember. Gosh,
writing
I sent that in a long time ago. But we held them aside. And then we also did a call for stories to some of the schools across the country. We particularly asked for stories from girls' schools because they could use it as a reading and writing prompt in their classroom studies.
Mm-hmm.
And we read through several thousand stories and boiled it down to about 400. Then we boiled that down again to about 200. And those 200 stories we sent out to our readers panel of preteen girls.
Mm-hmm.
We had about 600 preteen girls reading the stories, evaluating them from 1 to 5, whether they thought 5, gosh, it has to be in the book, or 1, I'm sorry I wasted my time reading this story, and the grades in between there, and pick the best out of there. They picked the best stories, and Irene and I compilated them, put them together in a flow that makes the reader feel like they're going through life experiences, because, you know, life isn't all on, you know, all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of sad things, although that does happen sometimes. But life is a series of experiences and emotions, so that's how we weave the stories together.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have the network set up already because of all the previous Chicken Soup books. So when a new one comes out, my guess is people are already familiar with it, so it already has a certain audience immediately.
Absolutely. Well, and the kids write to us all the time saying, you know, we want this, we want that. And we listen to our readers very closely and what they're asking for.
Well, my niece was 9 years old last year when you were on the show, and I sent her my copy of Preteen Soul, and my stepsister said that she devoured it.
Mm-hmm.
She just sat down with it, and Joanna said that she read it like in a couple of days and really loved it and talked to her about it. And I think that's one of the things, you know, it's like a lot of parents don't know how to talk to their kids about sex. Well, this is kind of a book that gives parents and kids, in this case, you know, parents and girls, an opportunity to open some topics for conversation in an easier way, where you could talk about the story instead of the embarrassment of talking about your own life at first.
Exactly. And we encourage parents to use this as a tool. Actually, it can be a great platform to launch a conversation with your child about issues that maybe you feel uncomfortable broaching or they don't feel comfortable talking to you about. So it becomes a story about somebody else, which
mm-hmm.
takes all of that, you know, putting them in the spotlight or on the hot seat kind of thing away from it, and it gives you a chance to have a conversation with your child about something that's real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, these are not made-up
kind of
stories. You
yeah.
know, this isn't Harry Potter. It's real hard for a parent, even if a parent sat down and read through a wonderful story, a wonderful book, but it's fiction. It's difficult for a parent to say, well, what, you know, how do you feel about it, or what would you think, or what would you do in that situation,
mm-hmm.
because you're forcing your child to go into a fictional type of situation to try and make a decision, a life decision, whereas these stories are real. There's not one other series in the market for kids where there are real stories by real kids about what they're going through and what your own child is going through that you may not even be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So when you sit down and you read through these stories together, or you give the book to your daughter and tell her you'd like to discuss some of the stories later, or set up an appointment with your child to say,
uh-huh.
you know, why don't you read three or four stories and then we'll pick one to talk about, and we'll do that at lunch on Saturday, or, you know, before you go to bed on Thursday night when you don't have a lot of homework.
Mm-hmm.
You can create a situation where you can find out really what your children are thinking,
mm-hmm.
and what they're feeling and what they're going through, because this is a really strange age for parents and kids to learn how to communicate with each other better, because there's a transitional period. The kids want to kind of break away. They're trying to become autonomous. They want to be an individual. They want to formulate their own positions and their ideas and ideals in life. At the same time, they don't want to lose you as a parent. But it's real hard for them because they know that their parents still tend to think of them as kids.
Right.
You know? And they'll tell you, my own kids did. I'm not a little kid anymore.
Uh-huh.
I'm not, you know, what do you think? I'm a baby?
And part of
we
them
do.
Is, and part of them isn't.
Yeah, and we do tend to do that as parents because we are not in those transitional years with them. We're just, you know, working and
mm-hmm.
trying to keep life together, and all of a sudden your kid is a different person.
Mm-hmm.
It's
now,
very difficult.
I want to make a point here, and that is you're talking about, you know, a mom giving it to a daughter and talking about things. Well, the important thing, I think, also is that the mom read it also.
Absolutely.
For a
I
number
think the dad should read it.
Well, yeah, I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my sense of why every adult should read it, whether you have kids or not, is because it helps you remember that period in your own life and maybe the origins of certain issues you may be working on in therapy or need to work on in therapy. And so it allows you to start processing stuff that was, you know, long buried.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, you know, that whole thing about me remembering about slam books and the bullies
mm-hmm.
and things like that, well, of course it brought up some of my own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And with moms and dads reading it, I think they're going to, or they do gain, a more intimate understanding of what their daughters are going through. And as, you know, the moms may be able to relate to some of it because of their own experience, but the dads, it may help them understand a little bit more about how their period in that life has made them the dad that they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly. I think it's very important, and it also creates a space for the parents to come from a more compassionate, when you say intimate, and more empathetic, probably is a good term, point of view about the issues their child is facing, instead of, you know, parent to child, which of course we want to hold on to, but still coming from that empathetic space, which allows the love between parent and child to really flower
mm-hmm.
and allow the conversation to take place on a more intimate basis, where you're not like hammering on your kid, well, what are you doing and why are you doing that and
right.
you know, what's happening and why don't you tell me anything and why are you in your room all the time and why do you shut the door and why are you on the internet all the time? You know,
right.
Well, let's create a space of empathy with each other so that we can have better communication, so we can assist our kids to make better choices and become that healthy adult we really want them to be.
And I think also it gives parents, I know I read at the beginning that it will help girls feel less alone because other girls are going through the same thing. But I think a parent reading it will possibly feel less alone because they know other parents are going through the same thing with their kids, and their parents went through the same thing with them, and they all survived it, most of them. You
yeah.
know, so it may give them a little encouragement and a little perspective on things.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's very important. And the funny thing is that we have, you know, we talk about body changes for girls, you know, growing breasts and first bras and all that stuff is like a really big deal. And the kids who read these stories will realize that they're not alone going through it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny part of it for me in retrospect and looking at it is that everybody has insecurities about growing these boobs and finding bras that fit and all of that stuff. But I was one of the ones that had little tiny boobs, so that was my worry. But there's stories in here about girls whose breasts were too big at a younger age, which never would have entered my mind that those girls felt terrible and insecure and had a whole nother issue to deal with, because I was so locked into my own feelings about having small breasts. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I would think that it gave those girls a presentation that they were more adult and more of a woman than they were ready to be.
Exactly.
And didn't want people seeing them as an adult yet because they weren't ready for it.
Exactly. But when you're 12 and you're looking at some girl in your class that's got great big boobs and all the boys are going, ew, you know, all you think of is, wow, I'm jealous of that, or I wish I was like that or something. And since we've got stories in here coming from both sides of that event, so to speak, it really does give the kids introspective ability to look at somebody else's feelings about what they're going through. Same feelings you've got, just different situation. Mm-hmm. And that helps the kids to try and understand each other and become more empathetic with each other as well.
Well, I want to actually read a short passage here. Actually, it's about a page and a half. And it's near the end of the book, and it's called The Truth. And I like this because it's certainly in line with the title of my show, Tell the Truth. And it was written by a 16-year-old, Anna Bittner. Actually, I had an old friend named Bittner. And she wrote, "Guys, not a subject I have much experience with since I've only had one real boyfriend, Seth. He was the popular one while I was not popular. I had a crush on him big time, and I finally had a chance to go out with him. I was on cloud nine. 2 days later, I got a phone call from him saying that he didn't want to go out anymore. I found out later from mutual friends that it had just been a dare. It hurt a lot, but I slowly got over it. It took me 4 years to get a boyfriend because all I thought about when I met a new guy was, is this just another dare? Then David came along, and I knew that I wanted to go out with him. The first time I met him, I could actually talk to him. Around David, I felt like I could be myself, say what I wanted, or be silly. I never felt ashamed. He would call me just to say hi, and we would talk for hours about nothing in particular. And then things changed. It went from talking all the time to five-minute phone calls or none at all. Then I found out from one of my friends that David had told her that he couldn't be with me anymore. I told her that he needed to tell me himself because he needed to deal with his problems on his own," which my thought is, that's a very mature 16-year-old.
Yeah, tell me about
he
it.
He called
yeah.
that night, and he acted really confused on the phone. I asked him if he needed to tell me anything, and he said no. That totally sucked. Here it was, 2 days before the prom, the most important night of my junior year, and he wasn't even going to bother to tell me that he wasn't going to go with me. I asked him straight up if he wanted to be with me or not. All I really wanted at that point was the truth. I was brave enough to deal with that. I don't know, was all he could say after a long pause. And then the famous line came, I think we should just be friends. There you go, I said, that's all you had to say. If you just wanted to be friends, then we'll just be friends. I didn't cry, I didn't yell, I just got straight to the point. Oh, I cried later on, but I also smiled because I knew that I had been through this sort of thing before and had survived. If I could live without him before, then I could live without him again. I hear things now, rumors about him, denying that he knows me, and that's fine. I see him with his new girlfriend, and I say, hi. There's no, ooh, she's ugly, or he's such a loser, just a genuine hello and a smile. Through all of this, I have realized that relationships don't always last a lifetime, but the memories and the lessons that we learn from them can last forever.
Yeah, she's a very, very mature young lady.
And now, she wrote this at age 16, or that's when you received
it? She wrote
it?
This when she was 16.
Well, that's amazing. First of all, there's so many issues in this to deal with. The first one is what I teach people all the time. You know, we say that we're not going, that we didn't tell someone the truth because we didn't want to hurt them. mm-hmm. which is really a lie in itself, because mm-hmm. most of us, when we're withholding the truth, is because we don't want to deal with the discomfort that we will feel when the other person reacts to what we have to say to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what Anna did was, you know what, I can handle it, just tell me the truth. And that's a great point, because most of us, at least if we have the truth, we can start dealing with reality rather than the overblown monsters that we make up in our mind about what we think is going on when nobody's talking to us honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And she was amazing to just say, look, put it out there. And she took the high road, which was she didn't make it a difficult thing afterwards. And her attitude was, you know, I'll survive this.
That's
instead of my life is over.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why we loved this story so much. And we were very, very happy when it voted high.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a great example of a very healthy way to treat the breakup of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, during the preteen years and going into the early teen years, kids do have relationships that are very intense but last a short period of time because they're changing so rapidly.
Uh-huh.
And they expect so much, you know. I mean, we've given our kids this idealistic view and romantic, you know, desire level of how a relationship should be and everything from what they watch all the time on television and in movies, but yet that's not reality for them. You know, they're just not ready for that. But they try. They want to. They want mm-hmm. to have, you'll have fifth graders say, oh, I'm dating. You know,
right.
I'm dating. They stand around on the playground, look at each other, but to them that's a date. It's really uh-huh. important to them. So it continues throughout these years, and we love this story because it was very, very evident that she treated this in a manner that was respectful of the other person, which mm-hmm. is something that it's a hard thing for kids to learn because, I mean, from my own experience, even as an adult, if there was a breakup, I wanted to try and blame the other person. Well, there was obviously something wrong with him, mm-hmm. you know. And maybe that's not the situation sometimes. Maybe it just is that it's not meant to be, and you
right.
have to move on.
Right.
And be respectful of the other person. And like you said, let's get the truth out and talk about it and go on and not blame. There's no blame. It's just
mm-hmm.
that's the way that it is.
Which is the way it would be nice if more adults handled it that way.
I know.
Which we know they don't, because there's drama and anger. You know, if you look at most divorces, they're so, you know, volatile. And the adults don't know how to do it that way, so the kids don't really have the role models, for the most part, about how to handle relationships, because most of us see dysfunctional relationships in the adults around us.
Right.
So for a kid at 16 to get this the way she does, either she had some incredible parents who were great role models, or she was just intuitive enough to get it.
And it could be a combination of that, you know,
right.
that there are kids that are just have this internal fortitude and ability to see a situation and accept it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have let me just throw this. One of the kids that I grew up with in my neighborhood, and I don't know if we talked about this before, but he lived two doors down from us, and he lived with his stepmother. His dad died when he was like 12, and he stayed there living with his stepmother and his three half-brothers and sisters. Years later, I ran into him someplace, and he told me that she had been extremely abusive to him throughout this whole years that he'd been living there, right down the street from us. Good kid, always seemed to be happy, everything seemed to be fine. She had been forcing him to live in the garage on a cot. He was not allowed in the house. He was not given food until after the other three kids ate.
Wow.
And he got to have leftovers. And so he was, you know, I mean, I never entered my mind why he'd come over and eat with us, or, you know, just was a happy kid, and he was in my sister's grade, you know, a couple years younger than me. And I said to him, I said, what? I can't even believe this. What? How did you come out of that situation not being so terribly damaged that it ruined your life? Here you are, you're a successful person, you've got a wonderful family, you've got a great career. And he said, somehow or another, I looked around me one day and I said, wait a minute, that isn't how everybody else is. She's not normal. And it's not my fault that she's that way, so I'll just go over to my friend's house and eat.
God bless them for being that insightful. Yeah.
So what I guess the whole ball of wax of what I'm trying to say is that there are kids that are so intrinsically clear, like we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, that they can actually see reality and they are not hurt by it. They just learn how to use it to make themselves into a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Anna did in this situation, and that's why we love the story so much. Because
right. Now, you get me to a question that's been on my mind. I know you said that the majority of the pieces that you get are from girls or 11-year-old girls, but is there going to be a chicken soup for the boys' poll, and do you get letters from boys?
Oh, we do get letters from boys, but not to the amount of letters we get from girls. And I'm really not clear as to why this is happening, but we do get a lot of letters from parents of boys saying, you know, we are so happy because this is the first book our son has ever sat down and read through when we were doing preteen and preteen two and kids. So boys do read the books. They love them when they do read them. That's why we've incorporated in our other books a lot of sports figures and people that we know that the boys are look up to, you know, like Shaq O'Neal and Kid Soul and Karl Malone. And they don't, the reality, they don't tend to read as much as girls do for whatever reason. I don't know what that is. And you probably know much more about the developmental issues that boys face during this time of their lives. I didn't have boys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a part where I'm lacking too.
Well,
I
think part of it is boys at that age are encouraged to get outside, go play sports, not sit and read. But the reality of it is girls are encouraged to do that now, too, you know, to be outside, go play sports, and, you know, not just sit around and, you know, be still. But
and
it's
girls
also
do
not taught,
sports.
Boys are not necessarily taught it's okay to talk about these things and to be sensitive and things like that, you know, because they'll be too queer, you know, and things like that. So I would think that would be the reason, but I also...
I don't know. It's a weird thing, Stu, mm-hmm. because I've talked to lots and lots of teachers, too. They have a very difficult time getting boys to read and getting them to read anything.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just Chicken Soup for the Soul stories. It's mm-hmm. they don't like to read.
Right.
They'll sit in front of a computer and play computer games for hours, but they don't like to sit down and read through something. And actually, I was on a panel discussion last year with, and his name slips my mind right this second, but they've been doing a study about reading, and particularly boys. And the boys' level of reading in this country has dropped dramatically in the last 30 years.
Mm.
They don't really know the reason why, and what's happening is it's causing our space program. Now, I don't know, this is kind of a jump here for me, but our space program is suffering because of it. And the reason for that is reading is the only tool that develops a particular part of the brain, which is called imagination.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing else that develops that part of the brain. It's like a treadmill for that portion of the brain that stimulates creating something from nothing, which is what imagination does, something from nothing.
Because I think when most of us are reading, we're imagining what we're reading.
Exactly.
We're seeing it and we're experiencing it sensorily, I think.
Right, and there's nothing else that does that. I mean, you can't watch television or watch movies or be on the Internet to do that. It doesn't do it. It doesn't develop that, if you want to call it a brain muscle, it doesn't develop that brain muscle. So the boys that are graduating from college with degrees in certain areas that where they would be going into being a scientist or something like that in the space program, they don't have the ability anymore to develop that something from nothing, from just imagining it.
Well, so, but aren't girls taking the places there? Because girls are so much more encouraged to go into math and science today than they ever used to be.
That is happening. But what he's saying is it's really a loss of brain power that we're suffering from, you know, the male gender right now,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to figure out some way to stimulate boys to read again. So I don't know, because 30 years ago, boys read.
Right.
They
well, I
don't.
Think maybe the Harry Potter books has helped that, because most of the
it
boys
has.
I know have devoured those, too.
Yes, that particular
because
you know,
it's about
helped.
Basically about a boy who's empowered.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know that when I was reading your materials here, that part of the proceeds from the sale of this book goes to a particular nonprofit. Can you tell me about that?
It's the name of the nonprofit is Girls on the Run International. It's an awesome program for girls, started by a woman that I just think is just out of this world. Her name is Molly Barker. If you ever have a chance to get her on your show, you should. Mm-hmm. She's just awesome. It's actually it's sort of a it's a empowerment, emotionally lifting program that's disguised as a running program. It teaches girls about self-esteem issues and how to deal with other girls when you're going through some of the issues that we have in our book. But it's all encompassed in a training program to learn how to run a 5K.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just neat. It's really cool because the kids get out and run, and they have particular meetings, and they've got like over 100 chapters now in the United States, and they're growing by leaps and bounds. I think she told me last year they grew by 30%, which is, for a nonprofit organization, that's just out of this world. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show you that there's such a need for girls to, like we were talking, get out and be physically active. But this program also helps them develop their self-esteem, and it really deals with that because it sits down, the kids sit down right after their practice sessions, and they talk about stuff. They talk about certain issues and things that are going on. It's a very structured program. Very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, it actually reminds me of one of the other stories, and I don't know the name of it or where it is in the book, about this girl whose parents went through a divorce, and mom remarried, and that one of the ways the dad, that stepdad bonded with her is to get her to go running with him.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah.
And the story was beautiful because it talked about how angry she was about the divorce, how she went to live with her mom, her brother went to live with the dad, the really sense of upheaval, and how she resented her mom's engagement and really resisted liking the stepdad, and finally started realizing how happy they all were together and what a great guy he was.
Mm-hmm.
And running was part of that.
And it is. It's a great thing to do. Running is it can be a very, very uplifting experience. I used to run when I was younger. I can't do it anymore because I have bad knees. No, I shouldn't say that. They're not bad knees. They just don't work very well.
They're not as strong as they used to be. Mine too.
But running is a wonderful thing because you can. I don't know of another one that you can do as a group or do it individually. You know.
Yes.
Choice.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I was really impressed with in the book is at the end of a lot of the stories that the girls have written, if it's a particular issue that comes up, what I really like is you give an editor's note and tell them where they can get additional information or additional support, like, you know, suicide prevention and kids' health, I think it's called. And
mm-hmm. Child Help
others.
USA.
Say again?
Child Help USA is one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that is just a really great thing because, you know, these stories may trigger a lot of identifying, and then what? You know, where do they go from there? And you give website addresses and I think phone numbers in some cases. And
there's a lot of organizations that we've run across through the years that we really think are doing such wonderful work, like Child Help USA and Kids Connected, which is an organization of kids that mentor other kids whose parents are going through a cancer experience. I mean, where else would you turn to if you're lucky enough to find something like this? It's just a wonderful thing, and that's why we put those resource numbers at the ends of some of these stories. There's also some in here teaching kids how to deal with grief because that's a big issue for kids. Different types of issues that they're dealing with. And we're one of the few Chicken Soup for the Soul books that we do, Irene and I, where we do include resource numbers in here because we love the kids so much and we love our audience. We want to continue to support them even after they've done reading the story.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important because a lot of kids don't know where to turn when they can't turn to mom or dad or a teacher or they don't feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, even though they may see numbers and thoughts all over their schools on posters, a lot of them don't necessarily connect. But if they're already emotionally connected to the story that they're reading, they know that that's the website they need to go to.
Mm-hmm. Like for the Child Help USA, which is a organization that helps kids that are in abusive situations, it also will help kids who have a friend or a family member that's going through that kind of a situation. It helps them go through this situation and know where to turn and when to really start using the legal process, or you know, they help them sift through everything. Awesome organization. And since we came out with their 800 number in our very first book, Chicken Soup for the Kid Soul, they've had about a 20% increase in calls.
Wow.
So they, you know, there's no way of knowing if it's directly attributable to our books, but I can tell you that I think that it is. I think that kids reading a story about one kid that's gotten abused or by whoever it's by, and we've got one in here that a girl was abused by her babysitter and she's afraid to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know, you know, as an adult, it's an older person, you know, she wasn't even really sure she was abused. All she knew was that she felt very uncomfortable about what they were forcing her to do, and she finally told somebody. And that's what we encourage kids to do, is tell somebody. Tell your parent, tell a trusted adult, tell somebody, call this number. If you can't, don't have anybody to turn to, call this number. And I think it's real important that kids have someone to turn to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about grief being dealt in the book here. And, excuse me, and another one of the favorite ones that I read that actually I did cry when I finished reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of it, but this girl had some siblings, and mom was a single mom. And the girl went to a store and saw this tough-looking biker standing
there.
Oh,
yeah, one of my favorite stories.
Oh, it was incredible.
It's called
the day
our dad came
home. This is the guy from my mom, and
yeah.
She brought him home. And mom came in, what is he doing here? And she, you know, scolded the girl for bringing a stranger into the house, but the guy felt the connection, and he persevered, and they ended up getting married, and he became an incredible stepfather to these
mm-hmm.
kids and a great husband, and then he developed cancer, and they were all there thanking him as he was dying.
Mm-hmm.
It was
a great
beautiful.
Story, and I had several phone conversations with the author of that story. She's a wonderful woman. She's a woman now, has gone through this whole experience, and she said, I knew when I saw him. She said, I just walked up to him and said, you're the guy from my mom.
Uh-huh.
I'm taking you home. He's like, yeah, sure.
So I want to read another poem here because we're coming down to like the last 8 minutes here. And it's on page 215. It's called Suffocating.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes, I am suffocating and I just need to breathe. I'm smothered under pressure. I must be relieved. Nothing I do is right. Nothing they say is fair. I cry and scream and throw a fit, but no one seems to care. Nobody will listen to what I have to say. My life is not important, yet I'm living every day. I can't do what I want. I cannot stay out late. Here I sit and write this poem to release my pain and hate. I'm confused and I'm alone. I'm lost inside my mind. No one will search beyond my looks to see what they might find. Powerful statement. So many thoughts confuse me, feelings I can't perceive in this time of adolescence, and I just need to leave. None of it makes sense. None of this seems real, and no one understands the emotions that I feel. I'm still suffocating, and I still need to breathe. I'm smothered under feelings. Let me be relieved. That was written by Marion Distante, who was 13 years old when she read it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the skill of the writing is amazing, but the emotions expressed are just very profound.
They
are.
They're
dull to read.
They are. And to take this all into perspective, let's remember that kids at this age feel that way, and then 5 minutes later, they're totally a different person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to be able to tap into the depths of despair that they go through and then the heights of joy is what parenting or, you know, being a support system for kids in these years is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you understand that they're going through so many changes. Let me read something that will sort of back that up. This is in a chapter called Straight Up Girl Stuff, and this is Girl to Girl. Ever felt happy one minute and sad the next? Experienced moments when you were awed by the beauty of love, friendship, and family, and a few minutes later you found yourself screaming at your mom, hitting your brother, and swearing at your friends? Wanted to fit in very much, but still wanted your own identity. Scared to stand up for yourself, yet you know you were right. Trembled when your crush stood next to you? Then welcome to the preteen years of a girl. Enjoy your journey through these words of advice that might help. And that's the preface to a story where the girls just give advice to each other.
Uh-huh.
And that was written by two girls who were 13 and 12.
Uh-huh.
So that's the balance that we were talking about, balance at the very beginning of our conversation today.
Right.
The balance that the kids have, and that's what they're looking for during these years, is the balance to these extremes of changes that they're going through. The mood changes, their body changes, their relationship changes. Everything is changing on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis. And the best thing we can do is just hang on for the ride and keep those boundaries nice and straight so that they, as they bounce off the walls,
mm-hmm.
they don't go over the edge.
Right.
And we're raising, like I said before, we're raising kids that will learn how to make healthy choices, know what's right in life, trust themselves, and grow into being healthy, responsible adults.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming down to the end of the show, and there's another section I want to read. It's actually in your introduction, but I think it's a good closing, too. And you write, and this is you writing, you and Irene,
mm-hmm.
your preteen years just might be the most important years of your life. You are taking shape in every imaginable way, body, mind, and soul. As you navigate through, remember that this time is unique and very significant. You are becoming a woman, so be in the moment. Embrace every day as you journey through the unknown in the company of millions of other girls like you who are also making their way through this time of life. It's your life. Love it and live it. Grab on to the adventure. Dream and plan. Take the good with the bad. Most of all, stay true to yourself and be good to others along the way. And while you do, hold close to the words of Karen Raven. And she says, only as high as I reach can I grow. Only as far as I seek can I go. Only as deep as I look can I see. Only as much as I dream can I be.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is. And, well, your paragraph was just as beautiful as what she wrote. So, and I really think that is a, you know, great summation of what this book is about and what your work is about. And I really commend you for doing something that is so important to so many lives as you've done with these books.
Well, thank you so much, Stu. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Final words, and how can people reach you if they want to? How can people who may be listening who want to send in a story do that for you?
Well, the address can be found on chickensoup.com, so that's the easiest place to go. There's links that'll go straight to Girl Soul, and also my website, preteenplanet.com, as for kids, only kids. Parents can go there to check it out, but it's got monitored chat rooms and everything. So either one of those places I can be reached, and the book can be purchased on Amazon.com or through Chicken Soup or any good bookstore is carrying them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm putting out a challenge to
yeah.
the parents and the adults that are listening, and that is to get some boys to read this and get some boys to talk about it with their dads or with their moms, whoever they're most comfortable with, even if it's taking a story and reading it out loud at the dinner table so that everyone's hearing it, and that way the boys aren't being singled out so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would be a really good way to do it. It's like I have a cousin, and they have two young kids. One's like 14 now, and the daughter's younger. And when Joan of Arcadia was still on the air, which I loved that show.
Great show. Great
they
show.
Used to watch it as a family and then talk about it after it was over. It was an amazing thing. So, Patty, our time's up, and I really want to thank you again for being on the show again, and I hope to have you back again, and maybe in less than a year. And I encourage everybody to go get Chicken Soup for the Girl's Soul or any of the other Chicken Soup books for all our souls. So thank you all for listening, and have a great new year, and we'll be back again next week. This is Stuart Altra on KXAM, and Tell the Truth Faster.